field. It is Robinson into the end zone. Touchdown, Chicago.
So on first down, Darnold.
Got that one complete. Midfield, 40. Braxton Berrios on his way. 10, 5, and knocked out at about the one-yard line. Eric Harris saved the touchdown for the moment.
Darnold rolls, looks back the other way, and this is the tight end, Griffin, who walks into the end zone.
And the Bears have recovered it. Stripped out of there by Khalil Mack. Stay in this game. A touchdown would make it mighty tough. High snap, Trubisky on the keeper will find the end zone.
Darnold throwing,
end zone. Touchdown, Robbie Anderson.
That didn't go well.
Pass over the middle in the air, picked off to the end zone. Touchdown, Brian Poole.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And baby, I love you.
What is this, a Derek Carr reference?
Welcome in, everyone, here on the Mac Attack. There's some highlights from two terrible teams that actually won football games yesterday. I don't know why you put the Bears in there. It doesn't make me feel any way, Magnum. The season's over.
Well, Trubisky's touchdown run was nice.
Yay.
He had a couple of really awful throws before that.
Yeah, it's really underthrown, overthrown Trubisky today.
See, but for
holding
me,
holding the offense accountable. Hold yourself accountable. Keep the TVs on, Mitch.
It's more a celebration of the Giants losing.
Yeah.
Okay. As opposed to the Bears winning.
All right, see, that's what I didn't account for, your New Yorkisms. And, well, yes. I know you're obviously excited today, Mr. Jets fan.
Yes, very excited.
This is what we talked about it. I mean, everyone we talked to on the show last week, every single person, when we talked whether it was betting or whether it was just straight competitiveness, right? People love money line Jets. Yep. And people were sure that the Jets could do this. And it was partly because Sam Darnold was seemingly getting better from his mono.
Yes.
And his team isn't as bad as I think a lot of people thought.
Well,
and there's the look-ahead factor, right?
Yeah.
The Oakland Raiders looking ahead. And that's hard to deny.
That was my initial thought. Like, hey, you know, this is a big game for the Raiders, but they've gotten so much. They've had so much travel already.
Yeah.
Now they got to go back to the East Coast. It's a 10 a.m. start, which I know some people don't really feel that that's a big deal, right? Like, history shows that it is, especially for the Raiders. They have the look-ahead game with Kansas City. Again, they have to fly all the way back to Oakland and then fly halfway across the country to Kansas City on for this weekend's game. So, yeah, I felt all along it was a look-ahead spot, but I also felt that it was a good – like, when I looked at the Jets' schedule, I circled this game as a win. Now, granted, I also circled Miami and Buffalo as wins, but I throw those two games out, and the Jets are right about where I thought they would be. Like, they're now 4-7. I felt that they were probably an 8-8, 9-7 team. It's still a possibility, but there's the games that they played terrible. They should never have lost the Dolphins game. They got blown out in that game.
And when you look at the Raiders, Chapman, I mean, it's hard not to say that on some level. I mean, we're not in the locker room, we don't know, but it's hard not to give some credence and some legs to the idea that they look past
and the New York Jets. Like you're getting up for the Jets, they're 3-7 going into the game yesterday. No wins against AFC teams. All three wins were against, somehow they beat the Cowboys. But they beat the Redskins and the Giants in consecutive weeks. You're probably not taking that team seriously.
All right. And it may be. That is exactly what happened. And to talk about the Raiders, coming up in a half an hour, I'll be joined by one of my favorites. He is a Raiders super fan. And he is also incredibly strong on boxing and mixed martial arts. RJ Clifford from SiriusXM, he's going to be calling in and catching up and giving us his thoughts on that Raiders performance from a fan's perspective. And also, well, why would I be bringing on a SiriusXM combat sports expert? He also works, I should mention, RJ works for Fox. He works on the broadcast for what was Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz in what was one of the more devastating knockouts you will ever see in boxing.
Ooh, that was brutal.
I mean, what was brutal was the fight up until the knockout. The fight was brutal. I think the first round had like three landed punches. It was very conservative. Maybe flashes of that prior fight still in both fighters' mind. I don't know. Either way, one thing became perfectly clear, and it's been clear for a very long time. If Deontay Wilder touches you, unless you're Tyson Fury, you're going to sleep.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the bottom line.
There were a couple knockouts in Vegas, not too far from each other on Saturday night, because I think Connor McDavid threw a knockout punch in the first round against the Golden Knights.
And we'll get to that. And what are we getting to right now? Head coach of the UNLV Rebel football team, Tony Sanchez, out.
Round.
Finish him.
Brought to you by VIP Collision.
Yes.
You know what? Let me do that again here.
Yeah, sure. There you go. Hey, got the gong.
It's the opening round.
That's right.
Finish him.
Hey. Brought to you by VIP Collision.
Brought to you by VIP Collision. Yes, I should mention, before we get into UNLV and Tony Sanchez, tonight, out of Tivoli. Is it Tivoli or Tivoli? Magnum, help me out.
I call it Tivoli.
Okay. Out at Tivoli Village at the Parkway Tavern from 5:30 to 7:30, I, Ryan McKinnell, am going to be down there. Well, for a couple reasons. Number one, I'm getting people signed up because Finley Volvo, they want to send you on a road trip, a VGK road trip, to watch your Golden Knights on the road. You get two tickets to an away game, you get a hotel. You're also going to get a car to drive around courtesy of Finley Volvo when you are on that road trip. Again, we're not giving you a car. I want to be very clear about that. I don't want to have to be pushing people away with a bat. That is not what we're doing. We're not giving away a car. But Finley Volvo is going to give you a car to drive when you win.
A loaner.
Right, exactly. So you're going to get a car, you're going to get a hotel stay, and you're going to get tickets to see the Vegas Golden Knights on a road trip game somewhere in the very near future. But that's not all. We'll be down at Parkway Tavern at Tivoli Village. We're going to have $4 Miller Lights out there at Parkway Tavern. We're going to have $6 7-5 training day drafts. That's obviously Ryan Reeves's new brewing company.
Revo.
Yeah, $5 Jägermeisters, $5 Jack Daniels, and $18 Miller Lite buckets. That's going down at Parkway Tavern out of Tivoli Village tonight. And it's not just about the road trip and signing up from Finley Volvo. Finley Volvo also has some really cool swag and memorabilia we'll be giving away, courtesy of some raffles we're going to be doing for those couple hours. Two, three weeks ago, Hannah and Alexis walked away with some signed goods. We had a lot of winners. That day, we had a copious amount of Wild Bill Carlson autographs, pucks, and posters. So I would imagine something similar tonight. Again, that's going to be from 5:30 to 7:30 out at Parkway Tavern at Tivoli Village. Going to be signing you up for this Finley Volvo road trip giveaway where you're going to get two
What
tickets.
Did you call it? Copious?
Copious.
What is copious?
A lot.
Oh, okay.
Bountiful.
There we go. Bountiful. I like that one.
Overflowing.
Overflowing, yeah.
So all that going to be going down at Tivoli Village out there at Parkway Tavern, 5:30, 7:30 tonight. Drink specials, tickets, and autographs from all your favorite Vegas Golden Knights players. So come down there, hang out with me as the Vegas Golden Knights get ready to take on the Dallas Stars. And Magnum, we'll be getting to that game in here in a little bit. Not going to be an easy win for the Vegas Golden Knights. And you just talked about it Saturday night. Connor McDavid running roughshod on the Vegas Golden Knights. But let's get to it. News of the day, not the Vegas Golden Knights. And you know what? Not even really the Raiders getting their teeth kicked in, although that is a pretty big story, which we'll be hitting on plenty over the next hour. But news coming down about, 2 hours ago? 3 hours ago?
Yeah, I had done some exercise in the morning, and I came home and saw that Tony Sanchez had been fired.
Now, not a surprise. I think the press conference is going on at this very moment, or it is just wrapped up. We're going to try to get you some audio, and we'll react to that and let you hear it if we can get it in time. But, Magnum, I don't think this comes as a surprise to anyone. The writing was on the wall for a little bit. And you know, Desiree Reed-Francois said it last year. It's bowl or bust.
Yeah, I mean, she was not kidding when she made that comment. Yeah. And I feel like UNLV was close. You know, they were close a couple of years. But I feel like at some point, Tony Sanchez needed to take the next step and get this team to a bowl game. Right? There were so many expectations after year one. He had a pretty respectable season. They beat Reno, won the Cannon. And you're like, you know what? This is going to be his worst team.
Unfortunately, that was not the case.
And, you know, the funny thing is I tweeted it out this morning that Tony Sanchez, of the last six UNLV coaches, it goes back to 1982 when Harvey Hyde, I believe, was hired. He actually is second among wins at UNLV in that time span. We're talking almost 40 years of terrible, terrible football at this school.
Sanchez was 19-40 as a coach.
Yeah, His win percentage is .322. He's tied with one guy at 19 wins. And, you know, the funny thing is, like, you look at the history of UNLV football. Like, Bill Ireland, I believe, was the first coach. He was pretty successful. Ray Meyer, I think it was Ray Meyer, coached the Patriots in the Super Bowl. He was pretty successful, too. The guy after him, fairly successful. Then we got to Harvey Hyde, and we began this decline, and UNLV is, John Robinson came in. UNLV has literally tried everything. They hired the legend, right? John Robinson, national championships at USC. Guy could recruit, brought NFL caliber players to UNLV. One bowl game, couldn't get over the hump. They then went to Mike Sanford, hot young assistant coach, had just helped Utah win the Fiesta Bowl. Nothing. Bobby Houck, nothing. Tony Sanchez made the program respectable. Now he got the facility built.
I was going to say, made it respectable more from the standpoint of the money that he brought in, his yes. relationship with top donors, and obviously the Fortita football complex yeah. that gets built, which is going to last.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal. That is his legacy at UNLV.
It's the biggest thing that has happened to UNLV football in decades.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't believe that you can't win here. Right? Like, that's kind of like you can't win at UNLV. Listen, you can win anywhere if you bring in the right coach. There's zero reason with the amount of talent in this city alone, you should be able to get talented players. I mean, I saw something the other day. John Denton in 1996 was the last UNLV quarterback to play a full season. 23 years wow. since UNLV has had a quarterback play a full season. And I remember I was here. Jason Thomas helps them get to a bowl game. Next year, they're hyping this kid for the Heisman. What happens? They go out, they lose a close game at Arkansas, which they should have won, and it started the snowball. John Robinson never recovered. Never. You know, his last year, I think they won 2 games. I think they were 2-10 or something. But
So I guess the question, Magnum, would be, you look at what Sanchez has done, the money that he's brought into the program, the fact that it hasn't been respectable in decades, and they haven't had any sort of winning really ever, and you look at him on his way out. And you do have to wonder, I think it was 3 wins in his first season, 4 in his second, 5 in his third, and then it went regression 4 and 3.
So yeah,
went 3-4-5, 4-3.
So Harvey Hyde hired in 1982, 8-37-1. Wayne Nunley, 86-89, 19-25. Jim Strong, 17-27. Jeff Horton, 13-44.
Oof.
John Robinson, the best, 28-42. He was the best coach they've had at this school in almost 40 years. Now, before those guys, you had Tony Knapp, 47-20. Ron Mayer, 27-80. Bill Ireland, 26-23-1.
So Magnum, who do they get?
I don't know.
Because we're talking about a guy who's only been here for, 5 years?
Yeah.
Who brought in a ton of money, who had, at least on some level, some people excited. I know a lot of people weren't. But I think the people who weren't excited, what were you expecting?
Well, I
UNLV
think there were,
football is clearly not good.
Yeah. Well, there were people who were like, they left. Oh, you hired a high school coach. It's pretty funny. Right? Like, people
would
say
that high school coach got you a building that's going to stand for decades.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I don't know where UNLV goes, because ultimately, and we were talking a little bit about it before we got on the air, they're going to go as far as the school is willing to put into it.
And with a new stadium that's going to be looking ridiculous.
Yeah.
When Rebel football plays.
I mean, you now have the premier stadium maybe on the West Coast.
I would say it's the premier stadium in North America. I think I said if it was going to be built to scale like the Moxon suggested,
yeah.
Which as we've seen now it is going to look exactly, seemingly, from what we can tell from the construction, if it looks like that, which is going to, we're going to have the best stadium in North America.
Well, yeah, and now you have that practice facility
yep.
that at least puts you on par with every school in the conference, right? And these schools you are recruiting against, I don't believe this idea that UNLV is recruiting against USC. You're not.
No, you're not.
You're recruiting against Reno, Colorado State, Boise, San Diego State.
And in those recruiting battles, you should win out every single
yes,
time.
Based
you
on the facility and stadium.
The facilities, the weather, let's be honest, the women,
mm-hmm.
the lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because you talk about it all the time with USC. You joke, it's tongue-in-cheek a little bit, but those are things that always get into factor
yeah,
when you're talking
weather.
About... Hey, when you're... All that.
You're close to the beach.
The experience.
Right, Snoop Dogg
right.
is coming to your games.
Right. Well, now you got Vegas. And there's a lot to like about Vegas. It's obviously a changing landscape. It's not the Vegas of, you know, 20 years ago. Hell, it's not the Vegas of 12 years ago when I moved here. 10 years ago. 8 years ago.
It's constantly evolving.
So much has changed. Yes, that has been the narrative, right? But I would say even in a city known for constantly evolving and changing and adapting, well, we're entering right now with the Knights and Raiders, and we'll see all the discussions around Major League Baseball and potentially the association, the NBA. We'll see what lies on the horizon, but all very interesting. And again, not a surprise that Sanchez is out. I did see a quote from Sanchez that said his predecessor, or his successor, I should say, is going to need to have, the fan base is going to need to have some patience.
Well, and the successor should thank Tony Sanchez as well, because he's the reason why that facility is on the campus.
Yep. All right, so let's get into some NFL. Obviously, we'll touch on the Raiders here plenty when RJ Clifford joins the show here in about 15 minutes. We'll get more into that beat down and what it means going ahead to the Kansas City Chiefs. And really, what does it do to the Raiders' playoff hopes? Because they're still very much in it. And they got a matchup with Tennessee coming up after Kansas City. And that's the real big matchup, right? That could be the real swing game. That game they have to win. They should have beat the Jets. That goes without saying. They absolutely did it. And the way they lost is certainly demoralizing, because there's ways to lose. You know, you're going to lose, but you want to be competitive. The Oakland Raiders did not look competitive at all. And that is potentially concerning. Speaking of not looking competitive in big games, Magnum, oh my God, the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, that team is for real.
Yeah. I mean, listen.
We thought they were good.
Right.
But last night, to me, was a statement.
No question. Prime time.
Yep.
Against arguably the generation's best.
Yeah. I mean, that was...
shut him down.
Yeah, that was an absolute statement. They beat the hell out of the Packers.
And Aaron Rodgers, who, with 104 yards, was the fewest by a quarterback since 1950 with 20-plus completions. And it's also the worst statistical game of Aaron Rodgers' career. But it's also, not only is it the worst statistical game of Aaron Rodgers' career, it was also one of the worst statistical games in the history of the NFL.
I mean,
and that was done by Bosa and that 49ers defense.
Yeah, they're vicious.
They kicked their teeth in.
That team, it's amazing what a difference one player makes. Right, like Nick Bosa has made such a difference to that San Francisco defense. I mean, remember, he's another guy who there was a lot of controversy coming out. Sure. Right, remember, he's a MAGA guy. How will he fit in San Francisco?
And what's the old adage? Winning cures all, right?
Yep, people don't care, right? If you could be, it doesn't matter, right? Like what your politics are. If you're helping my team win football games, people are cheering, right? Now, we laugh about Mason Rudolph getting pulled and benched yesterday. But in hindsight, Nick Bosa has just been an absolute monster. I mean, he's probably going to be Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to look at the list. But, yeah, I mean, he certainly stands out.
He's been good.
When you talk about the way he's transformed that line and what this defense is doing to opposing teams.
And then you have Richard Sherman.
Sure.
But
you also got to think about when these moments happen, right? We talked about
big
this.
Games,
we talked
big
about
spots.
Right, we talked about this with Lamar Jackson in terms of his highlight reel and when he performs and what that does to his MVP candidacy, right? I think the same thing can be said, what that would do for Bosa's Rookie of the Year candidacy in terms of when is he doing some of these things. And, well, obviously last night, in prime time against the Green Bay Packers, just completely shutting Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers down, which is, you know, kind of a nightmare for the Green Bay Packers from the standpoint they've got this new coach, right? He's supposed to be this offensive wizard, Matt LaFleur. He's supposed to have all the answers. He's supposed to gel with, you know, Aaron Rodgers. And listen, I'm not saying it all goes to this game, but you can't avoid the inevitable fact of the matter, and that was it last night. Aaron Rodgers had his worst statistical game as a quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, and it came under Matt LaFleur's watch.
Well, I don't know if you blame Matt LaFleur for that, right? I mean, look.
How do you not?
Well, I think maybe you give more credit to San Francisco for game planning properly.
When you have the generation's best quarterback and you don't utilize him to the point to where he has the worst game of his career,
one of the worst statistical games
in the history of the NFL, Magnum, on some level, that has to fall on your offensive wizard of a coach.
I would also say he doesn't have the weapons around him that some of these other quarterbacks have. So,
Devontae Adams and Jones. These
Devontae Adams is really good, right?
Yeah.
But
he's got more than a lot of other teams, Magnum. And a lot of other quarterbacks.
And
more than Lamar Jackson.
But Lamar Jackson is a completely different type of quarterback,
he is.
Too.
And
Aaron Rodgers does not have the capability to tuck it and go for 60 yards.
As we talk about Lamar Jackson, Niners, showdown with Lamar Jackson coming up next week.
Oh my God, what a great stretch for. I mean, can Baltimore? I think can cement themselves as a Super Bowl favorite right now.
No question.
If they win tonight,
yes,
and then beat the 49ers next week, yes, they are the favorite to win the Super Bowl.
I don't think there will be a question. If they are able to do what will be very hard to do, then yes. And I think they have a listen. We saw what Russell Wilson, you know, could do to this 49ers team. When you can get past, extend past Bosa, and extend past this line, and you have to make them worry about a mobile quarterback. And I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers doesn't have wheels, but 35 years old, he's not the Aaron Rodgers that he used to be. So you look at what Russell did to this team, and you look what potentially Lamar Jackson could do to this team. I think that's going to say a lot. Now, if the Niners go out and they take care of Lamar Jackson, my goodness. You talk about Super Bowl favorites, Magnum.
Well, yeah, San Francisco puts themselves
in. I was going to say, whoever wins that game, arguably, if they do it in convincing fashion, you've kind of got to think that they're going to be the Super Bowl favorites. Now, I look back at that game last night, and you look back to what happened to the Packers, and more specifically, you look at how great the Niners looked. Did that have you reconsidering your NFC top of the tier, top of the pantheon, if you will, teams?
You know, I'll be honest. I was not impressed at all with Seattle yesterday. I felt like Seattle was the team. New Orleans, to me, has not been impressive since Drew Brees has come back. And their defense, all of a sudden, has given up a ton of points.
Yeah. Time to go back to Bridgewater? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. Well, Brees played well. I mean, it's just that the defense right now seems to not be playing well for New Orleans. You know, they lost that game to the Falcons. They didn't play great yesterday.
Well, you're getting longer into the season, right?
I have to be honest. San Francisco right now looks like they are, and I understand they lost to the Seahawks, and Russell Wilson is probably the MVP. At least he's in the discussion. I think that could be my NFC title game right there.
Who?
Seattle and San Francisco. Yeah.
And I would
love to see that because, A, it's West Coast, right? I hate the East Coast bias, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a West Coast guy now. I grew up on the East Coast. I've been out here longer than I've been there. I'm a West Coast guy. Give me two West Coast teams. And you know what? Give me four West Coast teams. I don't care. Give me the Raiders and the Chiefs in the AFC title game. I don't care. But to me, Seattle and San Francisco look like they are the two best teams, even though I wasn't impressed with Seattle yesterday. Going on the road to Philly, who's basically playing for their lives.
I mean, they won.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the point. They did win, but they weren't impressive in winning. But it's a tough place to win.
I was going to say, it's not the Bears beating the
Giants.
That's a non-impressive win. I was so upset with that, just from the standpoint. It was like the Denver game, which I was bummed they won.
But I'm not a believer. Not a believer in Green Bay.
Well, no, but at all.
And Dallas is a fraud.
Seemingly, yeah. I think they're 2-5 against decent teams.
They lost
this
year to the Jets. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it's not good for Dak Prescott because you got to think about the money that's coming his way. And
if you're the Cowboys, that's a.
And now you got Jerry Jones blaming people, Jason Garrett coming out and having a comment. It feels like, 10 years it's been Garrett and the juror?
Oh, man. It feels like
it's coming to an end, doesn't
that's
it?
That's a situation that I feel, and I am a certified Cowboy hater, but I think it's if I'm a fan of Dallas, I am torn. Because I don't feel like Dak Prescott is a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Yeah, but you got no other options.
But the problem is, you kind of lucked out. You drafted him, the third or fourth round? You kind of lucked out that he turned out to be as good as he is. Because obviously, if you felt he was that good, you would have drafted him in the first round.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things because he's in that weird level of where he's not elite, but he's better than average. And I think if you're Dallas, you sign that guy. The problem is he's going to want to be the highest paid quarterback in the league. Like, he's definitely better than Jared Goff. Like, there's no debate about that.
Right, which makes it so problematic in the sense that Jared Goff is the highest paid player in the NFL.
Yeah, like that's the scary thing. Like, Jared Goff is the highest paid quarterback in the league, and he's probably, 12 to 15 in terms of best. He may even be lower than that.
Thank God the Bears didn't re-sign Mitch Trubisky. Yeah. That's all I'm thinking about right now.
That would have been great, right? Oh. They 12-4. It's not his fault they lost the playoff game.
Right.
Five-year extension.
Ah!
$200
million. Oh, man. Boy, did Chicago dodge a bullet with that one. And now it is up to the Cowboys to, listen, we don't know if they're going to dodge a bullet or not. I think the next 5, 6, 7 years will determine that after they make their choice with Dak Prescott. Because they got a hell of a choice to make. Because you just resigned Ezekiel Elliott. He's got all the money coming.
You got Amari Cooper coming.
Right. You got Amari Cooper coming. Do you want to tie you know, your future to Dak Prescott.
How about?
I don't know what the alternative is.
Well, I think maybe the alternative is maybe you attempt to sign Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay, and then just go all in on the run.
Yeah.
And then just build around Bridgewater and let him do his thing.
Because I think Bridgewater could be a really good quarterback. I still feel that.
I agree.
And we saw New Orleans. Look, you give him weapons. He's got Michael Thomas. And he has running back who's really good in New Orleans, Kamara. I mean, they went undefeated with him. Went to Seattle and beat the Seahawks with him. So Bridgewater is a guy who I think will make his presence known at some point.
Could you imagine them letting Prescott go, walk, and then
signing Bridgewater, and then winning a Super Bowl with Bridgewater? I mean, it's crazy, but I don't know.
Just the optics of giving up Prescott to take Bridgewater, but it makes sense from the standpoint that
A, he's probably going to be a lot cheaper.
And then the question would be, who's going to pay Prescott?
The money
that he wants, which is, you know, potentially upwards of $30 million.
Well, I mean, here's the other one. If you're Carolina, are you done with Cam Newton?
And now we're talking about this.
Musical chairs.
I'm starting to look at next year, and there are 6, 7, 8 teams that could potentially be needing a new quarterback.
Yeah, I mean,
it's what you said. You're just going to be trading. You're just going to be switching scenarios.
Right, and here's the other one. Miami, they clearly need a quarterback.
How does Philly feel about Carson Wentz? Not that it matters because he signed.
Yeah, you're stuck with Carson Wentz. Love him or hate him, he is your quarterback.
So I guess you have to look at if you're a team without a quarterback that's tied up to any sort of range, you've got to be feeling pretty good. At least like I look at the Bears, right?
Yeah.
Now, maybe best case scenario, insanely enough,
Dak Prescott ends up in Chicago?
No, say like a Derek Carr situation where he's inked up, I mean, at least a little bit, right? And it doesn't come at a crazy, crazy price tag. He's not great.
Yeah.
But he's not terrible.
Yeah. Like, he's good enough to win you football games and maybe get you. I mean, he's shown you he can get you to the playoffs.
Potentially. Man, what a wild time for free agency.
That whole thing with Dak Prescott. I mean, if I'm Dallas, yeah. I don't know if I'm giving him the money he wants because he was awful yesterday.
Well.
No completions to Amari Cooper. You have a top five wide receiver and he gets shut out.
Some of that falls on Jason Garrett.
And Stephon Gilmore is a really good cornerback, but still.
And that team and that coaching staff has to.
And it's in the rain and, you know, all those.
Well,
you know
that's
what?
True.
But that was a dud performance by Dak Prescott. Like, highest paid quarterbacks, elite quarterbacks, don't have a game like he did yesterday. And he's got the best running back in the league. That team should not. What are they, 6-5? They should not be 6-5. He's got a good defense. He's got a great offensive line.
Yeah.
It's been banged up a little bit. But that's a lot of money to tie into a guy who you don't know if he's going to take you to the next level.
Yeah. And that all comes, obviously, next year. A lot of decisions to be made by numerous teams. And obviously, the Cowboys' microscope is under them. And the heat, as I said, is getting turned up between Jerry and Jason Garrett. It feels like Jason Garrett's time in Dallas is over. And I can't really blame him. All right, before we continue, got RJ Clifford from SiriusXM coming up here in a second. We're going to talk about this Raiders blowout, and then we'll also get into a different kind of blowout. Deontay Wilder absolutely flooring Luis Ortiz on Saturday night out the MGM Grand. What does that mean for the heavyweight division in boxing? But I just want to run off some stats. This was put out by NFL.com. Do you realize what we're living this year in terms of history? Frank Gore, he had 65 rushing yards on Sunday. I didn't even know this. And this went over the Broncos, bringing him up to 15,289 career rushing yards. He passed Barry Sanders.
Unbelievable.
Yep, and he moved into third all-time in rushing yards. Next up, Walter Payton at 16,726. Don't know if he gets Walter, but I don't think it really matters.
No.
What he has done.
Is amazing.
It is. And his style.
And he's
not a run-out-of-bounds type guy. Yeah. Like, he has been a bulldozer from Miami on. Oh, and he was used at Miami. He wasn't like a guy who was on, like, load management. Like, Frank was used at every stop of his career. Mm-hmm. He is still here.
And he was really good in San Francisco.
Yep. And he was good in
he was everywhere good he's in been, Indian. He's been good.
He's good in Indianapolis. And speaking of Indianapolis, Michael Thomas of the Saints joined Hall of Famer Marvin Harrison, Colt, as the only players with at least 100 receptions in their first team's 11 games of the season.
What do they have in common?
I don't know. What do they have in common?
They both play with maybe the greatest two of the greatest quarterbacks of this generation.
Yeah, Drew Brees and Peyton Manning. Absolutely. And then here's another one for receivers. With 50 receiving yards in the Buccaneers win over the Falcons, Mike Evans topped 1,000 receiving yards, joining only Randy Moss as the only other players in NFL history with at least 1,000 receiving yards in each of their first six seasons. I bring that up because I don't think Mike Evans gets enough credit with the quarterback that's throwing to him.
He was so good in college at Texas A&M. I mean, I remember every team seemed like they were rumored to be drafting him.
Yeah.
But you're right. He just does not get the team he plays for is terrible. B, it's like he's in a market where nobody seems to care.
Right.
And he has quietly put himself in the discussion as best wide receiver in the NFL.
And listen to these final two stats that we got as we talk about living history with Frank Gore passing Barry Sanders and Michael Thomas joined in Marvin Harrison, potentially going to break his reception record this year. And then obviously Mike Evans joined in Randy Moss. Listen to these final two. The Patriots have at least 10 wins for their 17th straight season. That is jaw-dropping. That gives them the most consecutive 10-win seasons in NFL history, passing the 83-98 San Francisco 49ers. That is, again, jaw-dropping. Russell Wilson, final stat here, only quarterback in NFL history who's led his team to a winning season in each of his first eight seasons. What we are witnessing in the league right now, in terms of talent, in terms of dominance, in terms of young up-and-comers, in terms of old veterans doing their best. I mean, it's very special times in the NFL. Not so special, though, for Oakland Raiders fans. Absolutely butt-kicking at the hands. Or, I don't know, we can say at the hands, it felt like a team effort. The New York Jets absolutely bludgeoning the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. Magnum, very happy, not so happy, diehard Raider fan, RJ Clifford. He is also SiriusXM host of MMA Tonight on Tuesdays and Thursdays with former Super Bowl champ AJ Hawk. And he is also on the production team at Fox Sports. So he got a firsthand view of Deontay Wilder absolutely blasting Luis Ortiz on Saturday night. We're talking Raiders and boxing with RJ Clifford coming up next here on the Mac Attack.
The Mac Attack returns. You're listening to the Mac Attack.
All right, back here on the Mac Attack. And reminder, Vegas Golden Knight fans, I'm going to be out at Tivoli Village tonight at Parkway Tavern from 5:30 to 7:30 watching the Golden Knights take on the Dallas Stars with you guys. And we got giveaways. Finley Volvo wants to send you on a road trip to support your Golden Knights. Two tickets to an away game, a rental car to drive around, and a hotel stay. Come down to Tivoli Village tonight at Parkway Tavern. Sign up for that. And we're going to have Vegas Golden Knights swag to give away. We're going to have raffles. We're going to have autographs. All that good stuff. And we've got drink specials, of course, going down at Parkway Tavern. That is the team that resides here now. Of course, I'm talking about the Vegas Golden Knights. Coming up in a little less than a year, the soon-to-be Vegas Raiders are going to be touching down. The only question will be, will those Vegas Raiders be coming off a playoff berth? And to answer that question, we head out to the phone lines, join up with Raiders super fan and MMA and boxing expert from SiriusXM. He's the host of MMA Tonight. He is also, I guess, a buddy of mine, RJ Clifford. What's up, RJ? How you doing, pal?
Of all those titles you gave me, buddy of yours is probably the highest esteem of all those titles, and I appreciate that, Ryan.
Well, we know that's a lie. So, RJ Clifford, will the Oakland Raiders be coming off a playoff berth when they arrive in Vegas a little under a year from now?
I'm going to say 40% chance they do, and this is why. They're obviously coming off of a thrashing that they took from the lowly Jets yesterday is going to make everyone think that the season's completely squandered and gone. And they definitely have an uphill battle, but they are the seventh seed right now. They don't have the tiebreaker over the Steelers for that sixth seed. It's likely the Buffalo Bills will get that fifth seed in the AFC West. And so they're in the running, and they have one of the easier schedules coming out. They've got a very, very tough game in the Kansas City against the Chiefs on Sunday. But then they're at home against the Titans, who are in the running. They're home against the Jaguars. And then they've already beaten the Chargers. They've already beaten the Broncos to close out the season. So they could close this season out 3-2, maybe even 4-1, and likely get in there. But obviously, they have to patch up some massive holes that were discovered in New Jersey yesterday.
Yeah, so when you talk about those holes obviously happening in New Jersey, I mean, it was a demoralizing loss, I would imagine, on some level. But, you know, John Gruden has seemingly had his finger on the pulse of the squad. I expect him to do, you know, a fine job of turning him around and getting ready for Kansas City. But RJ, just as a fan, when you were watching what was happening yesterday, what was going through your minds? And as you talk about, you know, those glaring holes, what were some of the things that stood out to you?
Well, the big window we've gotten this season, we've gotten big plays from unlikely people. Eric Harris getting two interceptions against the Chargers a couple weeks ago. No one expected that for a Division III guy to come up so big defensively. We've had Max Crosby, a mid-rounder, at the defensive end, getting a bunch of sacks and a lot of defensive pressures that we didn't expect, especially considering our fourth overall pick.
Sure.
Hasn't been doing that much. So we've been getting big plays from random people. We also had a lot of plays fall into our lap as well. Some sloppy quarterback play from our opposition, some defensive breakdowns against our opposition, and everything, all the big wins we've gotten, it all kind of came together perfectly. And so when it seems everything went wrong against the Jets, it just looked that much worse by comparison. And in all fairness, I think the Jets, you know, Sam Darnold's a pretty good quarterback and doesn't have mono, right? And we saw that yesterday.
Right.
We're also really beat up in the secondary. Our line was all together for the second time this season, but they played terrible. It was a wake-up call, considering, you know, all things being equal, right? We have arguably one of the best offensive lines in the AFC, a potential Pro Bowler, an offensive rookie of the year, a running back in Josh Jacobs, and we're still going to run the ball against the Jets' number one run defense. That was the number one thing I was looking for, was could our outstanding rushing offense compared to the outstanding rushing defense of the Jets? The answer was no. So when strength versus strength doesn't go our way, when big plays from random players doesn't happen as well, you get a 34-3 blowout.
Yeah, and I also think when Derek Carr's dinking and dunking isn't working, it's hard to scheme out of that. And I would imagine on some level that's a concern of yours, right?
He's capable of the long ball when he needs it. We saw it against the Chargers on November 7th. It's just not part of John Gruden's offense.
Yeah.
That's just not. He wants the ball out of his quarterback's hands in 2 seconds. It's that West Coast-style offense in a lot of ways. Get the ball to his receivers in stride. A lot of play action built off of smash mouth running. We have the heaviest offensive line in football. It's not his game, but he is capable of doing it. We're not a team that plays well from behind, which is a shame because that's where we often find ourselves.
There you go, RJ Clifford, host of MMA Tonight, Tuesdays and Thursdays on Sirius XM, Fight Nation 156. All right, RJ, you are an MMA expert, but for those that don't know, you also have been dipping your hand in the boxing realm quite frequently over the last couple years. I know you're on the Fox Sports broadcast team, and you have a lot to do with, obviously, that fight that went down this weekend at the MGM Grand. Deontay Wilder leveling a nuclear bomb on the face of Luis Ortiz. We actually talked about it. We hung out this weekend. We spoke plenty about it, but we kind of had, like, differing viewpoints, right? Like, I was of the opinion that Wilder looked terrible for 6 rounds. I didn't think he was scheming for the knockout. I'm not going to say it was lucky, but it is what we've seen from Deontay Wilder pretty much the entirety of his career. There are huge technical flaws in his game, but it doesn't matter because he consistently finds a way to touch his opponent and knock them out. What did you think about Saturday's performance from Deontay Wilder, and where does the truth lie for you?
Well, look, if he caught a couple late knockouts after looking terrible in just, you know, 4 or 5 fights, then I can say, all right, this isn't the game plan. When he's done it in 41 of 42 professional fights, I can't sit here like, you know, I'm not a mathematician, Ryan. I'm no stats major. But if in 41 of 42 fights you do roughly the same thing, lose rounds, and just kind of try wait until you find your opening and then find the opening and then level your world-class level combat sports opponent to the floor and watch his soul escape his body, I can't say it's giant holes in his game and he's just, you know, like digging his way out of it. Like, you know, you look at, to use an MMA reference, we talked about, like, Anderson Silva had no good wrestling. Is that a giant hole in his game or just not part of what he was trying to accomplish? And so with Deontay Wilder, like, you know, when you dissect that right hand that knocked out Luis Ortiz, it wasn't until Wilder sort of kind of established the jab in those, you know, 4th, 5th, 6th rounds that it made Ortiz bite on a 3-quarter jab And then as Ortiz knew a right hand was coming, it came a split second faster because it was kind of a faint three-quarter jab. That right hand came fast. Ortiz was lifting his left elbow to block that right hand. He was blocking the correct combo. It just wasn't fast enough. And I think that was not just lucky of Deontay Wilder. That wasn't just pure speed of Deontay Wilder. He was creating an opening and looking for his openings, and he found it. And he's a guy, again, 42 fights, 40 knockout, 42 wins, 40 knockouts. I can't say it's fluky. I have to be able to admit that he knows what he's doing when he's done it so consistently.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not fluky. I would just say if you're, a part of Deontay Wilder's camp, if you're his coach, or better yet, let's use this example, the man who's probably going to be fighting him next, not probably, I mean, it's all but been confirmed, Tyson Fury, the rematch of this generation, at least for the heavyweight division. If you're Tyson Fury, you've got to be licking your chops at that prospect, right? That the fact that, again, it's not fluky, it's just there are huge technical flaws in Deontay Wilder. When I say that, he leaves himself open, he punches wide, he's inaccurate at times. So these are things that I feel like Tyson Fury would think that he could capitalize on, but RJ, you would have...
He did.
You would have had a match in the first fight, he would have.
He ruled it a split decision. Tyson Fury won that fight. Deontay Wilder should be 42-1, not 42-0-1. So if I'm Tyson Fury, yes, absolutely. I'm licking my chops and saying, look, I should have beaten him the first time. I got 12 rounds to kind of feel him out and get to know him better. But on the flip side, Deontay Wilder, his line isn't just a line; it's truth. His opponents have to be perfect for 12 rounds against him. He only has to be perfect for 2 seconds. And that's why he's an edge of the seat type of fighter. Like I echo what the Fox commentators were saying. I don't think it was just hyperbole that even though there was just atrociously lulls in the action in the opening rounds of Wilder versus Ortiz, Ortiz was beating him, but he was beating him in like a 3-5 punch count. Like he was landing two more punches around, but that's all it took. I was on the edge of my seat because that's what Wilder does. Is that opening comes at any time. Pow, you're knocked out. I literally looked down at my phone for a split second and missed the knockout live. I had to watch the replays because that's just how Wilder is.
All right, so RJ, we're with RJ Clifford from SiriusXM and Fox Sports. I'm curious, man. I know the hype for Wilder Ortiz was good. It wasn't great. The flip side of that is what this is leading to, and that is, of course, Wilder Fury 2. I hope it goes down in Vegas. We'll figure out. We'll find out, I should say, here in the coming weeks where exactly it will be. But, location, venue aside, RJ, just from a strictly a bottom dollar standpoint, in a hype standpoint, where are you going to rank this rematch in terms of heavyweight fights that we've seen in the last 20, 30 years?
20, 30 years. I would say just slightly behind Tyson's biggest ones, right? Like the Tyson Holyfield, those type of... I would say it's just behind those as far as how... using a sliding scale of the 90s, right?
Right.
Now, what I mean that is, there'll be more. This will do more pay-per-view buys because there's more pay-per-view buyers out there. This will do more money because of inflation. So, like the metrics that we use, numerically, are going to be higher, I think, than all of those. As far as culturally, like Tyson was still in his prime, and you know this, Ryan. Like we were young when Tyson was prime. Yeah. We felt it. We knew what he was doing.
Right.
Culturally, he's bigger than any of these heavyweights currently right now. However, with Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua coming up in 2 weeks, and then the winner of Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, if Wilder wins and Ruiz wins, they're both PBC guys, that super fight, that unification fight is easy to put together. We will, I think, finally have the closest thing to a Muhammad Ali or Mike Tyson we've had in a very, very long time. So I think with Ruiz and Joshua getting their rematch out of the way coming up in Saudi Arabia December 7th, that's only going to add to the momentum, add to the storyline of Fury and Wilder. And just as the heavyweight division goes, as goes the sport of boxing, and we finally have, a group of guys that can get wins and losses against each other and build a Muhammad Ali or a Mike Tyson type figure.
That is great stuff from the one and only RJ Clifford. You can find him on Twitter at RJ Clifford MMA. RJ, buddy, thanks for giving us a few minutes. I know this is your recovery Monday, so we really appreciate it.
Heartbroken from the Raiders, liver tearing apart from 5 days in Vegas. I'm amazed I got through this whole interview.
That makes two of us, buddy. Good stuff. That is RJ Clifford. As I said, you can find him on Twitter at RJ Clifford MMA. And you can catch him tomorrow if you're a series subscriber. He'll be the host of MMA Tonight. It will either be with him and Dan Hardy or him and AJ Hawk. I don't know. I should have asked him before we let him go who he's hosting with tomorrow. But you can catch him tomorrow on MMA Tonight, Fight Nation 156 Overland Series XM. All right, when we come back, we're going to delve into this Vegas Golden Knights and Stars game and take a look back over the weekend to, well, a serious Connor McDavid ass kicking. This is the Mac Attack. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Mac Attack.
Vegas Golden Knights back on the road tonight in Dallas. And I'm going to be back on the road. And catch me out at Tivoli Village tonight from 5:30 to 7:30. Be out there at Parkway Tavern getting you ready. Well, not just getting you ready, but enjoying the Golden Knights game. Got $4 Miller Lite drafts, $6 7.5 training day drafts. That's Ryan Reeves's new brew. Got $5 Jägermeisters, $5 Jack Daniels, and $18 Miller Lite buckets. And we also, courtesy of Finley Volvo, are going to be signing you guys up for a drawing that will enter you to win tickets to a future Vegas Golden Knights road game, a hotel stay, and a car to drive around, courtesy of Finley Volvo, when you are down there on that road trip. So come down there to the Parkway Tavern at Tivoli Village from 5:30 to 7:30. Coming out, take advantage of these drink specials, and get signed up for that Finley Volvo giveaway. And also, that's not all we're going to have. We're also going to have autographs, swag, memorabilia that you can win tonight. Going to enter you guys in some raffles. We'll be drawing names. Can walk away with some cool VGK stuff as well. That is at Tivoli Village, 5:30 to 7:30 at Parkway Tavern. I'll be down there. All right, so Magnum, let's get to it. Saturday night, not the best outcomes for the Vegas Golden Knights. I think we said it on Friday. The one goal is stop Connor McDavid, stop Connor McDavid, stop Connor McDavid. That's all you had to do.
Well, the problem is they didn't stop Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl, who had two assists in the game as well. So McDavid had only scored one goal at T-Mobile Arena coming into the game on Saturday night.
Yeah, but coming into that game, he was on, what, a 9 or 10 game point streak?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think he had 13 points in the last five games he played. He is, look, and with no disrespect to Sidney Crosby.
Right, it's them and it's him. It's him more specifically.
Connor McDavid is the best player in the world. And I'm so lucky in that I've gotten to see him play as many times as I have.
Well, I was just going to say to Vegas, he comes back one more time this season.
If you go to any game this year, buy tickets for that next time they come and play Edmonton comes here.
Yep.
Because he's special.
And all due respect to everyone else playing on the Vegas Golden Knights, the Mark Stones, the Max Pacioretty.
There's no one even close to him. It is like, honestly, it's like going to see Michael Jordan when he was in his prime.
It is.
I never got to see Gretzky play. I never got to see Jordan play. I've seen Connor McDavid multiple times. While that doesn't make up for it, he's that type of generational talent.
And he cost the Knights on Saturday. Now tonight,
well, the first goal he scored was disgusting.
Well, that was, yeah. You're talking about that was on the Knights.
Yes, yeah.
But when you say disgusting, not disgusting in the skills.
But the way he just skated around Flurry and
that's him.
Yeah, he's good.
It's the calmness, the confidence.
His defense is so underrated,
it is,
too.
But when you talk about him with the puck, it's that confidence knowing that he's the best player in the world. He doesn't rush anything. He doesn't need to force anything. He just is, quite simply,
the best. Oh, and by the way, he's coming off a torn ACL.
Yeah, they're that, too. So you look ahead to tonight in the Dallas Stars, Magnum, the game that I'll be watching, as I mentioned, down at Parkway Tavern in Tivoli Village from 5:30 to 7:30. Dallas Stars, a team that has always terrified me as a Blackhawks fan because they're young, they're fast, very akin to the Colorado Avalanche. They've got holes that they need to figure out, but God, when they figure it out, when they play in the means that they're capable of playing, they're a dangerous team.
Yeah.
They're going to be dangerous tonight.
Well, they figured it out the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, they're burning. Now, Golden Knights really not figuring it out. Obviously split here recently coming off the Calgary and Toronto games. Those were fine. But apparently Coach Gerard Gallant not liking what he's seeing because we are back to the original lines that we have come to know and love over the first couple years.
I think there may be some changes coming. We saw Saturday night Paul Stastny was bumped down to play with the fourth line. Cody Glass moved to center on that third line. This team right now,
they're looking for answers.
They are an average team.
Yeah.
And until they prove otherwise, that's what they are. This is not a Stanley Cup winning team until they prove that they can compete with the best teams in the league. I think they get beat tonight. I think they get beat on Wednesday at Nashville.
Mm.
And then they come home Friday and play a team that's ahead of them in the standings.
Oh boy, Magnum.
It's gut check time.
Well said. It is gut check time for the Vegas Golden Knights. Can they get it done tonight against Dallas? We'll find out. I'll be out there at Tivoli Village, Parkway Tavern, 5:30 to 7:30. Come kick it. Win some tickets. Win some swag. I'll be out there. See you then. And I don't need the money just to say that I'm rich.